Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you. Post mic is good. I'm going to go a little bit closer. Okay.
Can I get you to tell me what you had for breakfast?
I had terrible gluten-free waffles that I bought by accident. They're disgusting.
It was a gluten-free accident?
Yeah. They're so gross.
So what do you do? You're a freelance writer?
Yes. Usually I say freelance journalist.
Freelance journalist.
And the editor-in-chief of The Ethnic Isle.
What's The Ethnic Isle?
It's a blog about race and ethnicity in Toronto.
All right. And you write for the Globe and Mail.
I write for the Globe. I write for Toronto Life. I write a bit for Today's Parent.
Gender politics, real estate, and race.
Yeah.
That beat.
Yeah.
Welcome to Shortcuts. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Jane Litvinenko, Hubert Golin, Albert Liam, Albert Eisenberg, John Rudy, Chris Benoit, David Harder, Sean, Tom Gleason, Daniel, and Meredith Rogers. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer. And it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They are not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible, heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
This wasn't even on the agenda today, and then the arrest happened, and then that like insane press scrum. So I guess we're going to talk about Gian a bit. I feel like I don't want to be pushed and pulled by like the news cycle or the temperature of things. And, you know, a couple of days ago, there was this atmosphere of like, maybe I should lay off this because people have had their fill of this for a while. And now it's, you must talk about it because that's all the people are talking about.
Right.
You know, we have some license in this, and it's not even about some organic process. It's what the news decides to cover in many cases. I mean, you know, I guess this was reacting to the cops laying the charges and doing the arrest, but there's not much to say beyond what everybody saw.
No.
You know?
I guess the charges, I mean, what is the one the one about choking? Apparently it carries a potential life sentence. That's, I guess, something.
Yeah. And that one was of interest to me because, you know, before I heard those charges, I was really not sure. You know, I have some idea who the three criminal complainants are, and I was not sure if any of the more serious, I mean, they're all serious, but the more extreme charges that we're aware of physical harm, I wasn't sure if that was part of what the cops had, and it looks like it is.
Right.
You know, so beyond that, I don't have much to say, but like, does this mean that I can't talk about the things that I felt were still outstanding and needed to be talked about? Like, you know, does this mean we can't talk about the fact that no one at the CBC has taken the slightest bit of responsibility yet, and everyone still has the same jobs, except for Arif Narani, who is shuffled around. Nobody at the CBC has answered the question. You know, Gomeshi alleged, let's not forget this, Gomeshi alleged on that Facebook post, which has disappeared, which may have been a condition of his settlement with the CBC.
Right.
On that Facebook post, he alleged that the CBC gave him the option of walking away.
Right.
After he showed them evidence that he'd brutalized a woman, he says they said, okay, why don't you say you quit? And you know, your dad just passed, so everybody will buy that. Mm-hmm. And we won't out you. And that's his allegation. And they haven't denied it. And the truth is, though it's possible he's been lying about a lot of stuff, there were lawyers present when that would have happened. So I find it hard to believe that he was lying about that. So did the CBC executives actually collude with him to cover this whole thing up? Why is no one asking that question? And why have we not heard any answers? That's something that needs to get talked about, and that this circus at the courthouse I should not obscure. And Denise, the other thing that I want to talk about, and everyone's very glad to move on from this, but I got to loop back on the Lyndon McIntyre thing, and I'm going to briefly, you know, go over where I think this just went completely sideways, because you know, Lyndon, he basically decided to use the momentum of his retirement not to just get a big, like, you know, gold watch, but to make a point about celebrity culture and the toxic work culture at the CBC, and about vulnerable workers at the CBC.
Right.
And you know, he had this unfortunate sentence where he kind of listed Gomeshi and Mansbridge in the same sentence, and nobody but Mansbridge and those affiliated with him actually took offense. Like, nobody reading that would rationally think, oh, obviously Lyndon is saying that Mansbridge too punches women in the face. Nobody drew that conclusion, but he misspoke a little bit. And that incited all of these responses from, you know, Neil MacDonald and Amanda Lang and all these people. And so that's what the press is focused on. And Kelly McParland at the National Post says that this is a nasty bicker fest, a cat fight at the CBC. And Vinay Menon at the Star just dismisses the whole thing. It's trash talking. It's unseemly. He doesn't like the tone, you know. And Doyle at the Globe says that, you know, where are the grown-ups at the CBC?
They don't like the tone, but then they don't want to talk about the other part. I mean, the post that he had on Huffington Post was really, really long. So, you know, you don't only need to talk about the part about celebrity.
Absolutely. And they focus on the part about celebrity and then say, oh, this is beneath us, change the tone.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the part that needs to get talked about. Here's what Lyndon McIntyre actually wanted to say.
The role of celebrity, especially in a workplace like the CBC, where the power of celebrity is undiminished, but the vulnerability of people in the system. You had the temporary workers, the interns, the junior producers, everybody ambitious, and job security diminishing. The gap in the hierarchy is opening up.
Okay, so I think that this is why Lyndon McIntyre spoke out. This is why he retired. And I want to speak with you about this vulnerable worker issue in a minute, because that is what matters of this. But first, we have to deal with how the press actually reacted to Lyndon McIntyre. What the press decided to pick up on was this kind of like very minor error he made in putting Mansbridge's name next to Ghomeshi's in his list of difficult egos, celebrity egos. So anyhow, that like created this whole kerfuffle of him getting banned. And then, you know, all these CBC personalities like Neil McDonald speaking out and calling him a horse's ass. And then it got turned into like a gossipy story about these CBC personalities beating each other up. And the whole point of what Lyndon was trying to make about vulnerable workers completely got overshadowed. And then they got on this high horse about like, you know, this CBC infighting does the broadcaster no favors. And this is playing into the hands of the CBC's enemies by bringing up this issue.
Well, I mean, they're just extremely emotional there right now.
Yeah.
And it's just showing, you know, and it's funny that part, because you say the vulnerable worker part didn't get noticed, which is true. And I want to talk about that some more. But also the part about the fact that the government has been chipping away at what was once a very useful public institution for years, decades, that also got overshadowed. And you know, it's one of those chicken and egg things like that we saw with all the Rob Ford coverage is who's really creating the soap opera here, you know? Like, why aren't people paying attention to the policy issues? Why are they paying attention to the Iron Sheik at City Hall? And it's like, well, why are you sending 12 reporters there and not to the strategic policy meeting. So whose fault is it really that it turned into gossip and not a discussion about what the CBC could or should be?
You make a great point. The media focuses like laser-like focus on this McIntyre versus Mansbridge aspect, leaving out all the important points that were made, and then says, why are we talking about this McIntyre versus Mansbridge? Like, let's move on. You know, this isn't doing the CBC any favors. So let's talk about the vulnerable worker issue. The issue that Lyndon brings up is you know, the celebrity culture.
Mm-hmm.
When you've got and then this disparity between like a contract worker who's there like 1 month contract at a time, and what can they possibly say?
Right.
You know, and I've written about this, that like the CBC, like, clearly, you know, there are whispers about or that's not whispers. It's known that Mansbridge can be a bit of a dick to people he works with. Nothing near what is said about Ghomeshi. And like, what is the message to somebody who might have a complaint about Mansbridge if they're willing to throw Lyndon McIntyre under the bus? But I think that you could even like extrapolate this outside of a culture where there are like celebrity personalities. And you brought up some good points to me earlier about, in journalism, what does it mean to have precarious contract workers as journalists?
Right. Well, I mean, and I thought you would be interested because in Gian Ghomeshi's Facebook post, when he was discounting everything, part of what he said is that there is a freelance journalist making allegations, right? Who is you? And I've been a freelance journalist for the better part of a decade. And it's not that I dislike being a freelancer, but as it's getting harder to make a living, it's also getting harder as a freelancer to do important stories, investigative stories, deeper dig stories, for a number of reasons. And so one of the reasons I assume that you went, you decided to collaborate with The Star is because we don't have lawyers, you know, and we could get lawyers, but they're quite expensive. And so there's a freelancer in BC, I guess her name is Robinson.
Laura Robinson.
And she wrote a story for the Georgia Strait. And got hit with a libel suit, and I think it almost bankrupted her, if that's right.
I believe so. And it's worth noting that the libel suit, which looks like, you know, we will see if it turns out to be a baseless libel suit that's unwinnable but is just there as a slap suit. It was originally filed against the Georgia Strait, who she wrote for, and Robinson. And then the charges against the suit against the Strait was dropped.
Right.
And they went right after the freelancer. And the Georgia Strait wouldn't protect her and said, oh, this is a freelancer. We don't protect our freelancers.
Yep.
Which to me calls into question the very like purpose of having a masthead. And they even impugned her journalism and said that she didn't do her homework. Well, then why did you publish it?
Well, because the new Toronto Star contract does not, new, I think it's about 2 years old now, does not cover freelancers for lawsuits and libel. So I think on the part of the Star, that's, as you say, not really great journalism, let alone business practices. And then as more and more journalism in this country is done by freelance workers or contract workers, it really just means a lot of stories are going to slide because nobody has the ability to actually chase them.
And there was, you know, a minor news story that you let slide that you might have otherwise pursued if you'd been on staff somewhere.
Right. And so, I mean, I was one of a million, you know, every single Toronto journalist was gossiping because everyone got this tip that Rob Ford had done cocaine on St. Patrick's Day at the beer market, or is it the beer market on the Esplanade?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I remember talking to you about it when it was like all in the rumor stage. And so, you know, I'm not even saying that I would have done nearly as good a job as Robin Doolittle and Kevin Donovan did at the Star, but I went down to the beer market and I was poking around and I talked to the bouncers, but it just, you know, it was just this giant story. I have to hustle to make my livelihood on a week-to-week basis. And I didn't, you know, I had friends and I have lawyer friends to bounce things off of, but I didn't have an institution behind me to just help me build that story. And so if we're getting to a point where more and more, especially outside of Toronto, stories are done by freelancers and contract workers, what stories like that are just going to disappear because someone poked around and it wasn't immediately obvious?
Yeah.
I mean, I did have a good experience, I should say, when I wrote for Toronto Life about the trial of Byron Sunny, who was jailed after the G20 for hacker type stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we were sort of going around a publication ban for me to do my story. And I said to my editor, you know, I really need you to revamp this contract that's not just about libel, but publication bans. And they were really great about it. And I felt really secure that everyone cared that I wasn't going to get put on the hook for it. So, I mean, maybe that's because it's a magazine and magazines have traditionally worked with freelancers, whereas newspapers are moving from the CBC, I guess, they're moving from a model where it was mostly staff to a model where it is more and more freelancers. And so they, I don't know, they're testing what they can get away with, I guess.
While we're talking about publication bans,
you probably know the name of the victim.
The victim's name is well known.
Even without saying her unique name, you know the 17-year-old girl.
Teenage girl from Nova Scotia who died after a suicide attempt last year.
Before this spring, I would have been able to say this girl's name on the radio.
And now we're not allowed to say your daughter's name on this broadcast under the publication ban. And if we do, we have to cut it out.
Right.
But do you want to say her name right now anyway?
Yeah, of course. Is her name.
This is just like, it's like we keep finding new ways to disappoint Rehtaeh Parsons. Like it just every institution fails her and fails her and posthumously fails her. It's just sickening. And now we're at this place where this law that's supposed to be for the benefit of you know, young people, it is preventing us from saying.
Well, I guess it's an intersection of two parts of the criminal code, because there's the criminal code which keeps sexual assault victims anonymous, or maybe three parts actually. So sexual assault victims are anonymous, youth accused are anonymous,
yeah,
and then also anyone who's said to be the victim in a child pornography case. So it's sort of an intersection of all of those, because there's also Rennell Harper in Winnipeg, who's 16, and she was sexually assaulted and her parents decided to release her name. And that was in mid-November. And they were able to, but I guess the judge in the Rehtaeh Parsons case was not able to because of the child pornography provision, not because of the sexual assault provision. That's my understanding.
So that's it. It's not about the offenders. It's about the child pornography provision.
I believe so.
And the judge said, this doesn't make any sense, but I have to do this anyhow.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm taking a risk here and we don't have any contracts drawn up, so I'll say it on the show. We'll cover you in the case of any repercussion. You know, and it's we're not the first, because the Chronicle Herald, I think, needs to be applauded for saying, you know, this is ridiculous. Everyone knows her name. American media is reporting her name. Her name is Rehtaeh Parsons. And the parents are saying, please use her name. They're trying to turn something positive out of this horror that they've lived through. There are real constraints to speech in Canada that don't make a lot of sense in many cases, and this is one of them.
Well, and especially because we all know her name, and it's the only reason that charges were brought is because there was this community uproar and this sort of anonymous with a capital A uproar that sort of forced these child pornography charges. I mean, there haven't been any assault charges. And so now the criminal code sort of retroactively is trying to protect her when no one was doing anything until her name became such a big deal. And the publication ban is also, I have a column coming out about this tomorrow in The Globe, but it's really impeding a journalist's ability to tell the story because there are people wearing t-shirts with her name in court, and that can't be in the news. And it seems a little ridiculous. And the Chronicle Herald, because they're in that community, and this is the thing too, is that everyone in that community not only knows her name, but knows the name of the boys, which I don't know. I don't know if you do. And so to not say any of their names seems a bit silly when everyone's just talking about it, but especially hers when she is infamous, you know, all across North America. It was a really smart decision. It looks like there may be charges laid, but I looked into this a bit. And so the max financial penalty is $5,000. And then there's also a chance of 6 months in prison. And I was talking to my husband about this last night, and I was like, oh, I'm going on Jesse's show tomorrow, and I think we're going to say Rehtaeh Parsons, and what do you think? And he's like, well, you know, are they really going to send you to jail when they haven't sent the rapists to jail? And so we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. You know, it's an absurd situation where it's our job in the media to cover the news, and the cops have decided not to lay charges in the case of people who've been saying her name on social media.
Right.
You know, anybody in that community, anybody on social media can actually speak more truth and specifically than you know, the established media can. That is a topsy-turvy, bizarro situation. But it's still like – there is like a fascinating aspect to this that like I've yet to read the definitive think piece on, you know. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the column that you mentioned is by the time this is up, people can go check it out on the Globe site. So, you know, the focus on names – and the fact that anonymous plays such a big role is interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also interesting to me that, you know, this gets held up as like, this is the cyberbully case. And this is about the, you know, the horrors of the online world and how cruel adolescents can be to each other. Whereas I think that certainly the adult world, the institutions that had a chance to do something about this, obviously share a big part of the blame. Mm-hmm. And then if you're going to look at why this finally got addressed, because no charges were originally laid and the authorities didn't give a shit about her or you know, about the crimes, the alleged crimes, it was social media that forced their hand, really. It was anonymous and it was an online uproar that made this into the issue that it is and forced the system to react.
Right. Did you want to talk about Ferguson today?
We're going to, yeah. Here
we go. Because, I mean, you know, the DA criticizing social media over there and saying that was the problem, that social media outrage and coverage of what had happened to Michael Brown was the problem. Again, it's like nothing would have happened at all. Not that anything really did happen in the end, but nothing would have happened without social media and citizen outrage.
It's become this weird shorthand for dismissing things, you know, to say like, well, I won't be tried by Twitter. You know, and like, I'm not going to pay attention to what's happening in the Twitter sphere, you know, and like you can kind of, I mean, you can dismiss things without actually getting into the substance of them just based on the, I guess, brand identity of silliness or gossip that it's associated with, you know, that social media is still in establishment circles. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That still works, I guess.
I guess. I mean, does it work? I guess maybe it works among a different audience than you and I are in or have.
Yeah. It works well enough that people still do it, I guess.
Yeah.
This is, you know, from our perspective, what we need to talk about when it comes to Ferguson, the Canadian coverage.
Tonight's rally didn't come without controversy. Over to Ana Vlahos with the organizers' Facebook faux pas.
Roger, today's demonstration was organized mainly through social media, and one post asking white protesters not to speak and to stick to the background did ruffle some feathers.
You know, I've been in story meetings where there's some big American story, and the question is, what's the Canadian take on this? What's the Canadian angle? And this is a pretty sad excuse for a Canadian angle. And this was covered. This was the CP story, and the Globe picked it up, that the Canadian Ferguson protest was controversial because they asked white people, the organizers asked white people to take a bit of a back seat.
Right. Yeah. I mean, was anyone upset about that?
This is
that
how you
was actually at the protest?
This is how you manufacture a news story, okay? And this is funny because it comes with the same derision of social media that mainstream media has. But somebody in the comment thread, I mean, okay, right. So one of the protest organizers said, you know, something to the effect of like, you know, like, thanks for the support, white people, but maybe don't jump in front of a camera in a protest about like race relations and racism, which sounds reasonable to me. And somebody said, oh, this is segregation. So now we can say that there was conflict and controversy among the protesters who felt that there was racism. Like, it's this aha, even the protesters have racial issues.
Yeah.
And like you're doing a news report based on that somebody in a thread on Facebook got into a little bit of a fight.
Right. And why would you do, I mean, everyone's so critical of covering what's happening on Twitter and covering what's happening on Facebook. And here are hundreds of people in real life standing on University Avenue. So why are we talking about someone on Facebook that was upset?
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? Probably because protests are all, and I don't even like to call them protests, especially what happened on University Avenue. I like to call it a demonstration.
Yeah.
Because what exactly are we protesting? Like, we're demonstrating, or I wasn't there, but these people are demonstrating, you know?
That they give a shit about what's happening in Ferguson and the miscarriage of justice. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, ultimately, they're probably just sort of sad. And what are you going to say? People were sad about a miscarriage of justice. And I guess that's not as grabby a story as like white people up in arms.
Yeah. I mean, I think the truth of the matter is that, you know, not that there isn't racism in Canada, but there is no Canadian angle
to this story.
On the Ferguson story, but that Canadians give a damn about it.
Yeah.
You know, and that this is you know, it's kind of a sad exercise in trying to pluck one out. But it's also a pre-scripted response. I mean, you know, and beyond just this Canadian take of like, oh, white people not welcome, you could pre-script everything that has happened. And, you know, like, it's so predictable. Like, and then what we're going to do is we're going to focus on the level of rioting and violence. And then we're going to, the cops shouldn't have killed that guy. But like, you also shouldn't break windows of stores. So let's move on.
Yeah.
And I could have told you that news story before any of this happened.
Oh, totally. And I mean, actually, CBC's coverage, and they have a reporter down there, and it was, they interviewed an awful lot of white residents of Ferguson, not understanding why their city was being smashed, you know, and the lead in this morning was like, there wasn't a lot of violence, but there was some. And then talking to a guy that saw this violence, it's like, well, what about just stopping at there wasn't a lot of violence? Like, and moving, you know, what I didn't hear on CBC this morning, even though they looped it over and over, is that there still might be federal charges, that, you know, the situation is not over. No, I just heard there wasn't a lot of violence, but there was some.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not just a script for like racially charged stuff. It's like any kind of mass demonstration or protest. If somebody tips over a car, if somebody breaks a window, then that is used to sort of discredit whatever all these people are taking to the streets about. And knowing what we know about, like, you know, the cops do place agent provocateurs within protesters to do shit like that. So it's like, you know, I it would be an interesting exercise to try to actually like write that news story a week earlier and see how much of it you'd actually have to change. That was Canada Land Shortcuts. My co-host today is Denise Balcassoon. Denise, where can people reach you?
I'm on Twitter at Balcassoon, which is B-A-L-K-I-S-S-O-O-N.
I'm Jesse at jessebrown.ca. I read all your email. I respond when I can. I'm on Twitter at Jesse Brown. The show's website is canadalandshow.com. The crowdfunding site is patreon.com/canadaland. This show is produced by myself and Andrew Norton. And the next episode of Canada Land will be up on Monday. If you like this show, support it. Sorry, Andrew. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures. And it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.